Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
For 2,000 years, my people, the Jewish people, were stateless, defenseless, voiceless. We were utterly powerless against our enemies who swore to destroy us. We suffered relentless persecution and horrific attacks. We could never speak in our own behalf, and we could not defend ourselves. Well, no more. No more. The days when the Jewish people are passive in the face of threats to annihilate us, those days are over.
You hear the applause? He united Congress in a way I've never seen it united in current years. Never. And yet, of course, afterwards, the liars and the war profiteers, the shills, stabbed him in the back with their little speeches. And Pelosi said she was in tears, saddened by the insult. What a joke. This woman is a joke of the highest order. But, you know, you expect that from her and Feinstein. What do you expect? I expect no different. Now they got that cretin, that Gutierrez serpent up there attacking Netanyahu, which is laughable. Netanyahu's a war hero. This is a cretin. A little cretin, an anti-American cretin, floods America with illegal aliens and pretends to be a congressman of the American people. Unbelievable. If we had a real leader, he would have said, I didn't watch the speech. Or I did watch the speech, rather, but I didn't agree with it, and here's why. But he didn't. Our leader, our supreme leader, Barack Obama, had the audacity to lie again, where even a child could see through it. A child who lies to a teacher can look at this man and say, Daddy, why would the president make a thing like that up? It makes you ask, did Obama ever tell the truth in his whole life? But I don't think it's really about Obama. He'll be gone and be remembered as a dot on history. A great experiment in the American experience that showed us definitively what happens when people elect someone who's not qualified for the job and what it does to the world and to America itself. The question is, can we survive and can the world survive 2 more years of this administration? I'm not so sure. But again, going back to the speech, we know why Obama didn't want Netanyahu to speak today. It's because they would hear reality as opposed to his academic falsehoods. Number two, they would hear the grave danger the world is actually in as opposed to the dandy speeches that Kerry's giving about how wonderful the Iranian mullahs really are and how we're close to a deal. Well, all lies. But you have to hear clip 16 and tell me if you've ever heard anything as embarrassing as this. Listen to it.
I did not have a chance to watch Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech. I was on a video conference with our European partners.
Like a video game. Okay. You're watching a video game, right? Didn't watch it. The whole world was watching it. Anyone with a brain was watching it. Every world leader was watching it. I want you to think about that. Here's a man who says, give him a chance to negotiate with the terrorists, the worst terrorists on the planet, the Iranian mullahs, right? So you'd think he'd want to at least listen to Netanyahu. So, all right, I don't like him coming here. He overrode me. I'm not going to be there. I'm going to show him I have contempt for him, blah, blah, blah. But I watched it. So you say, okay, I watched it, and here's what I thought. No, he has the nerve to think he can get away with his lie again. That's like saying Muslims had nothing to do with setting the Jordanian pilot alive. Muslims had nothing to do with terrorism. Folks in a deli, not Jews again. Everything he says makes you just, your skin crawls. Didn't watch it. If he was a real leader, first of all, he would have been there. And then said, I don't agree with the prime minister and here's why, and laid out his case. So if he didn't agree with Netanyahu, why didn't he just appear there like a real president and give a speech to America saying, while the prime minister has valid points for his own people, it's not what I see. It's not in the interests of America and the world to take that drastic viewpoint, and here's why. And lay it out, let the people decide. Instead, our supreme leader is so thin-skinned that he has to say, I didn't listen to it. And here's why I didn't listen to it. And if I did listen to it, I would have disagreed for the following reasons. It's utterly unbelievable to think that we're stuck with this guy for 2 more years and that there's no mechanism to get rid of him from this office of the presidency of the United States. Well, there is a mechanism. It's called impeachment, but you know and I know it's not going to happen. How will Obama and his minions react to the speech? They already have, in the shallow, mean way that they're known for. The only question that remains right now is the one I asked at the beginning of the show, which is how will Iran respond to Netanyahu's speech today? Because respond they will. Respond they will, as sure as I'm sitting here. They're going to do some kind of provocative act to show that they're not to be bullied, they're not afraid of Israel, they're not afraid of Netanyahu, and here's why we're going to do the following thing. And when Iran does act, as I suspect they will, all of the quisling Democrats will say Netanyahu provoked Iran. You wait and see, mark my words. Do you know that those fools at Fox News had the nerve to cut out Boehner's speech? The introduction, which was so critical to this whole thing, it was Boehner who invited him. Instead, that little shrimp, Brett Baier, kept shooting his mouth off. And that nasty piece of work, Charles Sauerkrauthammer, kept shooting his mouth off about what he thought. I was screaming at the television. Shut up, I kept saying. Shut up and let me watch Boehner speak. Shut up, Krauthammer. Shut up, Brett Baier. Just shut your mouths and let me watch it for myself. I was ashamed of Fox News. They wouldn't shut up for 1 minute and let me watch the speech. I had no other way. So I switched to CNN. Of course, you got the same thing. They cut everyone out so one of their left-wing fanatics could give his opinion or her opinion. This is an extraordinary day. You may not know it now, but you'll know it in the future looking back to today. Today was a turning point in the history of America. Not only the history of America and Israel relations, that's irrelevant really, but in the history of this nation alone, to have a president of the United States of America say such shallow things which are so apparently lies. What do you mean he didn't listen? He didn't have a chance to watch the most important speech of our time, but he knew it, but he didn't like it, And right away he sent out his mad dogs to put down Netanyahu. Listen what the mad dog said, that he didn't offer any viable alternatives. Well, he certainly did. Netanyahu did offer a viable alternative. He said, withdraw yourself from the negotiating table, and the mullahs will come running back to you, and you'll get a better deal. That's what he said. That was the alternative. He said they're nothing but rug traders. He knows how they work. He laughed about it. He said that's how it works in the Middle East. That's how any deal works. You go to a car dealer to buy a car, right? And you reach an impasse in negotiations. So what do you do if you want to buy that car? You stand there and say, can you please sell me the car at a lower price? The dealer will say, no, I'm not going to. In fact, I'm going to raise the price because he sees weakness. It's a standard negotiating tactic. So what do you do as a buyer? You walk out of the car dealership. My father taught me that as an antique dealer. He used to take me aside when he was buying stuff, and he would take me by the hand. He'd whisper, he'd say, watch what I'm going to do. And they would reach a point in the negotiation. He's trying to buy something to sell in his own store from a wholesaler. So I used to get scared. I was a kid. I said, Dad, don't do that. He's going to get mad at you. He says, shh. And he'd take my hand, he'd start to walk out, and he'd go slowly toward the door. I can remember it to this day, I swear to God. And he'd say, watch what happens when I get to the door. And I would sit there so frightened that the man who owned the stuff that he wanted to buy was going to get angry at him. And by the, he'd go, well, thank you very much. I'm sorry we can't do a deal. And he'd start to walk. And I would be shaking that my father was going to lose the deal. And he'd say, one step, two step. And as swear to God, as his hand reached for the doorknob in that wholesale antique store, the guy would say, wait a minute. Hey, Benny, hold on a minute. I swear it worked every time. Come on back in. Let's talk. This is how negotiations work, whether it's a man buying or selling a lamp or a man buying and selling a nuclear limitation program. Human nature is human nature. So to say that Netanyahu didn't offer a plan is ludicrous. He did offer a plan. He said, walk out on the bums and they'll beg you to come back because they need you more than you need them. Why do you assume that Iran is so tough right now when they don't have a nuclear weapon? Imagine how tough they're going to be when they do have one. So his minions come out and say that nothing was done. Without a deal, Iran's going to advance its program. Well, excuse me? They're going to install advanced centrifuges, which they're going to fuel its plutonium reactor and reduce or eliminate its breakout time if there is no deal? Is that what the Obama administration is saying? That without a deal, they're going to go ahead and install advanced centrifuges, which will fuel its plutonium reactor and reduce or eliminate its breakout time to a nuclear weapon. That's a lie. Let me remind you what happened in World War II when braver, more patriotic men were running America. The Germans, the Nazis under Hitler, were racing to develop a nuclear bomb. And so after they invaded and conquered Norway, they were developing heavy water at a reactor in the fjords of Norway. I don't know if you know this little story. It's one of the great heroic episodes of World War II, in which there were tens of thousands of such episodes. And some extremely brave, I think they were Norwegians, actually, underground fighters, skied over hundreds of miles. They skied in from Sweden. And they blew up the most heavily guarded heavy water plant that you could imagine, guarded by Hitler's crack SS guards. They killed them, got in there, and blew up the plant and slowed the program. They stopped Hitler's development of a nuclear weapon. They didn't say, we can't negotiate with Hitler. They didn't say, oh, let's negotiate with Hitler. They didn't say, maybe Hitler won't develop the bomb. They knew Hitler would develop the bomb because he was developing it just as a Netanyahu. And every sane person knows that the Iranian mullahs are developing the bomb. Do you think they're not? What do you think, they're slowing it down? Because the Supreme Allied Commander Barack Obama wants them to? They haven't slowed down one iota. They're speeding along. So it'll be a fait accompli and they'll have the bomb or 100 bombs. So don't fool yourself for a minute and think that there's a negotiation that's on the table in the interests of America and the world. There is no negotiation. There's only one choice right now. And it's not even a Hobson's choice. It's the only choice there is. And you know what it is. Do I have to say it? Because whether I say it or not, you know it's coming. Just as the resistance fighters took down the heavy water plant in Norway to stop Hitler from getting the bomb before we got the bomb, I can guarantee you, as I stand here, Israel, with several partners, not including the United States, will take down Iran's nuclear facilities. And the United States will shamefully not be part of that coalition, because the president will be too busy watching television or on a video conference somewhere. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
We're an ancient people. In our nearly 4,000 years of history, many have tried repeatedly to destroy the Jewish people. Tomorrow night, on the Jewish holiday of Purim, we'll read the book of Esther. We'll read of a powerful Persian viceroy named Haman, who plotted to destroy the Jewish people some 2,500 years ago. But a courageous Jewish woman, Queen Esther, exposed the plot and gained for the Jewish people the right to defend themselves against their enemies. The plot was foiled. Our people were saved.
Another reason Obama didn't want him here. A real man with a real history, with a real identity and a real nation to defend. How can you have that when you don't believe in your own nation? And you do everything you can in the middle of the night to undermine it, flooding America with illegal aliens. I go down a list. I wanted to mention something to you. Do you remember about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, some of the punks that work for Obama? You don't understand who really runs the government. It's these punky kids called aides. They are the nastiest pieces of work you've ever seen. Anyway, some of his punky advisors were quoted as saying Bibi Netanyahu is a chicken. Do you remember that? Remember it hit the news? They called him a chicken, a worse word than that. Do you know why they said that? Put it back in context. I'll tell you why, my opinion. Because we learned last night that Obama said if you launch an attack on Iran, we'll shoot your jets down. I think the big difference between Obama and Netanyahu is that one is open and the other one is guarded and secretive. Obama does everything in the secret in the middle of the night. Floods America with illegal aliens, passes a health care bill that no one knew what was in it until it was jammed down our throats. Everything Obama does is secretive and under the table. Netanyahu came out like a man and explained exactly what his people are facing, what the West is facing, what Iran really is as opposed to the fantasy of the academics, and why they must be stopped. He laid out his case, didn't he?
Exactly. And Michael, why...
And the American people responded positively because they like reality. They understand reality. They can't stand the shadow game being played by this character called Obama. And so let's go now to where I think Netanyahu made a very clear statement, which is that they will stand alone and go to war if they have to alone in clip four. Listen to this.
I can promise you one more thing. Even if Israel has to stand alone, Israel will stand.
You hear the applause?
But I know that Israel does not stand alone. I know that America stands with Israel. I know
wow.
that you stand
Oh, my
with
God.
Israel.
Do you hear that? When have you heard Obama unite people like this? The answer is never. His entire campaign is one of divide and conquer. It's another reason he didn't want anyone to see Netanyahu. A man who could unite Americans across the aisle? No, that's not his game. So you ask, why did Obama not want Netanyahu to speak before Congress? The answer is because the world can see what leadership is. That's number one. Number two, Obama's clearly selling Israel down the drain. That's number two. Someone wrote me and said Obama's fireside chat, the fire went out and the logs were fake. That says it all. His rebuttal was pathetic. Pathetic to say he didn't watch the speech. Can you actually believe that every leader in the world was not any leader in the world was not watching the speech? As I watched Netanyahu speak, somehow my mind, my cosmic mind, saw the leaders of China listening to it in translation. I saw the leaders of every nation on earth taking time out from their busy schedules to listen to what has to be one of the most important speeches of our lifetime. It's high noon, and Gary Cooper came to America. Gary Cooper came to the American people, and he said, not pleading, but stating very clearly, the bad guys want to kill me and my townsfolk, and we would love you to join us in defending us, but if you don't, we're willing to fight alone. That's what he said today. That's what he said. Did you hear the cheers? Did you hear the cheers? And then afterwards, the sickness that emanated from the mouths of these evildoers, Feinstein and Pelosi, was nauseating. Just nauseating. Well, you heard all of these little sound bites that we culled from the seminal speech by the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, hated by Obama. Hated so much that he did everything in his power to prevent this man from even stating his case as to why Iran must be stopped from developing a nuclear weapon. I want you to think about that. It's unprecedented to think that a president of the United States of America would tell a nation it has no right to defend itself. It has no right to even present its case to the American people as to why they feel that there's an existential threat to their survival. No, Obama instead say not only did he not want him here and do everything in his power to stop him and fail at it, incidentally, this is Obama's greatest loss, by the way. You know that, don't you? It will go down in political history as Obama's greatest loss to date. He has steamrolled everything the Republicans have done to try to stop his machinations. They couldn't stop this man.
This is an encore presentation of the Savage Nation.
Our national security is at stake. Our family values are at stake. And our economy is at stake here. So get over the fact that you don't like the president. We get it.
What do you get, you?
You couldn't beat him. Too bad for you. But
what
you're in charge here in the Senate.
What a hand.
Do your job.
Go to retire already. Go run a brassiere shop.
God, these people weren't in charge of the Congress when I was growing up because they might have deported my mother. It took her a while to get through her naturalization.
Please turn the clock back.
What if they passed something like that?
Did you hear the last statement from this witch? Did you hear what she had the nerve to say? Listen to clip five. Is it five? Listen to this. Three, the mother. Listen
to
this.
Thank God these people weren't in charge of the Congress when I was growing up because they might have deported my mother. It took her a
while
to get her naturalization. What if they had passed something like that?
Then you wouldn't be here and the country would be a better place. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The Solenterists on the left are raising the stakes on America, lying like they've never lied before. Barbara Boxer is Debbie Wasserwoman Schultz on steroids. If you think Debbie Wasserwoman Schultz is unique in being a vicious, backstabbing, evil person, you're correct. But she learned at the hem of Barbara Boxer how to be vicious. So now they're pushing 34, 50 million illegal aliens down our throats, all under the guise of national security, under the guise of family values. Can anyone listening to the Savage Nation tell me when Barbara Boxer last came out in favor of Christianity or in favor of the church or in favor of traditional marriage? The answer is never. To me, those are family values. But anyway, I live in another kind of world. At the same time, Netanyahu is being ripped apart by the Democrats, including Boxer, who just a few weeks ago pretended to be friends of Israel. The very same lying, backstabbing vermin, Salenterets, who are now stabbing Netanyahu and Israel in the back in order to let Iran get a nuclear weapon and wipe Israel off the map. You want me to raise the stakes on you, Barbara Boxer? I'll raise them on you. Because of your viciousness, because of your duplicity, because of the fact that no one could ever have trusted you in your entire life, Israel is now threatened with being wiped off the planet because you're letting your boss, Barack Hussein Obama, do a backroom deal with the mullahs of Iran, permitting them to get a nuclear weapon, which they have promised they will use to annihilate Israel. I know that you pretended you were a friend of Israel when the money was flowing, but when your boss, when Boss Tweed told you, tell Netanyahu to drop dead, you said to Netanyahu, drop dead. The minute Boss Tweed cracked the whip, you, like the little girl you are, fell in line along with that other duplicitous creature from San Francisco, Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein, who should have been in chains by now for what she's done to our national security, has the audacity to claim that our national security is at stake because of the Republicans. Astounding, isn't it? Here are some of the news headlines. Vatican seeks to quell Mexican anger over Pope's drug remark. Wait till you hear this one. You know, the Pope is the Joe Biden of the Catholic world. Everything the Pope says has to be corrected immediately by one of the guys who works for him. The Vatican sought to defuse a diplomatic tiff with Mexico after Pope Francis referred to the possible Mexicanization of his native Argentina from drug trafficking, the latest instance of Francis's casual speaking style getting him into trouble. Now, excuse me, casual speaking style? Well, it's coming from the Associated Propagandists, the AP. The Vatican said it sent an official diplomatic note to Mexico's ambassador insisting that Francis, quote, absolutely did not intend to offend the Mexican people with the remark or to detract from the government's anti-drug efforts. Well, why wouldn't he insult the Mexican government if they're flooding America with illegal aliens? But that's not what he's talking about. Here's what Francis wrote. He published the Pope's email on the website of his Alameda Foundation. Oh, Gustavo Vera, who was involved in combating the drug trade, set this up. He said, here's what Francis wrote. Hopefully we're in time to avoid Mexicanization. The Mexican government formally complained about the remark during a meeting with the Holy See's ambassador to Mexico, saying blah, 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 blah. So that's what's going on now, is that Latin America is threatened to become Mexicanized, and even the Pope has had enough of it. But right away they had to say he was stigmatizing Mexicans. You hear this? Meanwhile, on the immigration front, three arrested in New York City for allegedly conspiring to support ISIS. None of them look like Timothy McVeigh. None of them sound like Timothy McVeigh. None of them walk like Timothy McVeigh. None of them look like returning U.S. war veterans. None of them are wearing crosses. None of them have blonde hair or blue eyes. Three New York City residents, Mayor de Blasio's finest, two with Uzbekistan citizenship, and one a citizen of Kazakhstan, plotted to travel to Syria to join ISIS and wage jihad, the so-called Justice Department announced. One of the defendants also offered to kill the President of the United States if ordered to do so, the criminal complaint alleged. The men were identified in the complaint as Abdurasal Hasanovich, Jurabov, 24. Oh, that's all one name, sorry. Why do they all have three names? I only have two. Abdurasal Hasanovich Jurabov, a so-called resident of Brooklyn and a citizen of Uzbekistan. Akhar Sadkhmetov, 19, a resident of Brooklyn and a citizen of Kazakhstan. And Abra Habibov, 30, a resident of Brooklyn and a citizen of Uzbekistan. Federal prosecutors say two of the men came to the attention of law enforcement. What? Law enforcement last summer after they expressed online support for the groups. Sadkhmetov was arrested Wednesday at JFK as he tried to board a plane headed to Istanbul. Jerbov had plane tickets for March 29, and Habibov helped fund Kharmatov's trip, the complaint said. Well, let's hope that they get what they deserve, which is a green card from Obama, so they can vote in the 2016 presidential elections. I'm sure they'll be invited to the White House, but they'll have to make a stop first in San Francisco, where Nancy Pelosi may want to wash their feet, since that's one of her specialties. What else is in the news? Iran is blowing up mock U.S. aircraft carriers while Obama and Mr. Mary, John Mary, insist that they're looking for peace. We're hearing about more and more kidnappings of Christians and children every day. We hear that Obama has decimated the military. Without an opposition party in Congress, what hope is there for the rest of us not to be overrun as a nation with the illegitimate actions of the president? How will the Republicans caving in on amnesty affect you personally? Liberals, meanwhile, continue to push communism in the form of income redistribution and fairness talk. Why are they blind to the fact that it would kill everyone in this country? Can Christianity survive in the Middle East? Who is left in the world who can stand up to Obama to stop his destruction of America? The answer is, I don't know. It could be Putin, but we're not talking about Russia. We're talking about America. And God forbid we get Jeb Bush as a candidate. How did this happen? Is this the best this country can produce? Is this hack? How in the world can this country survive if there's a one-party system? You mean after last election they're throwing us this old fat hack again? I mean, what are they thinking? How can anyone get excited about this man? Can anyone explain that to me? How? How can you get excited about Jeb Bush? We know what we're going to get from him. More of the rhinos. More of the rhino talk. Let's put it to you this way. If you like Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, you'll love Jeb Bush. Let's put it to you that way. And if you like Mitch McConnell and John Boehner, you're going to even love the rotund one from the George Washington Bridge. I forgot his name. Chrissy or Prissy. I don't know his name. Chris Prissy? I know his name. Chris Prissy. Don't you know when I'm telling a joke? We have to go back a week so you can listen to the girl with the Goodwill clothing and the QVC earrings. Let's listen to her last week.
Right now what we're doing is trying to take their leaders and their fighters off the battlefield in Iraq and in Syria. We're killing a lot of them, and we're going to keep killing more of them. So are the Egyptians, so are the Jordanians. They're in this fight with us. But we cannot win this war by killing them. We cannot kill our way out of this war. But if we can help countries work at the root causes of this, what makes these 17-year-old kids pick up an AK-47 instead of try to start a business? Maybe we can try and chip away at this problem.
Now, maybe if these arrested in New York City from Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, who wanted to kill the president and others, maybe if only Abdurasal Hasanovich Jurabov and Ashgor Sadmakhatov and the other one from Kazakhstan had been given some job training by John Kerry, perhaps serving Christian burgers or the blood of young Christian children in a little juice stand in their native homes, they might not have wanted to go to Syria to kill people. But as you well know, John Kerry is what he is. Here he tries to defend Marie Barf. Listen to this carefully.
This is bigger. That's what Maria was saying.
Yeah.
And it didn't deserve, she never set out to say the solution is give them jobs.
Yeah. Secretary Kerry
talked about a much broader array of things we have to do.
Didn't,
we can't
lying.
Have a serious conversation about this without
yes, we can.
Politicizing it on cable TV and making it a
yes,
scoring point for one day. We're in trouble.
Gosh, yeah, right. What do you do every day of your life but figure out how to lie to the American public? And you're not doing a very good job at it. You'll never be president. Take your Swift Boat medals and throw them over the fence. You're never going to be president. Everyone laughs at you behind your back. They know you're living on your wife's money. You're a laughing stock, Kerry. Trying to back up Marie Barf. No, she did say the solution was to give them jobs. That's just what she did say, that dolt. Send her back to her wobbly communist parents, where you got her from Foggy Bottom. That's where she belongs. She belongs in Foggy Bottom with you. Now, wait, it gets even better. Here's Nancy Pelosi. That's Bela Lugosi's grandniece. Nancy Pelosi goes to Cuba now, and she's complaining and moaning because some don't want normal relations with this communist dictatorship on a fast track. Listen to this now.
If, in fact, we object to a centralized economy, a communist system, wouldn't we think it's a good idea to support the private sector, small businesses, entrepreneurship? Instead, there's that attitude of, again, looking backward.
Yes. She knows how to run a casino, I guess. She may take over the Nacional Hotel and run it for the government. Maybe she could take Maya Lansky's hotel and run it. Who knows? I mean, that's private business. This is the same argument. This would be the same argument as if someone argued in the 1930s that if you, let's say you object to a centralized economy and you object to a communist system, Don't you think it's a good idea to support the private sector in the Soviet Union and let Stalin build trucks and let Stalin build some armaments factories with U.S. help instead of looking backwards at evil Stalin? This is the mindset of this woman. That's why we play it. This is astonishing. Day and night, she's the gift that keeps on giving. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. I saw the younger Savage drifting around North Beach, hair flowing, struggling to raise a family and make a living in a liberal world. All the smiling people stabbing me in the back. All the good progressives in the cafes pretending to be good guys, good people. Grubbing around for a buck, trying to stab each other in the back for a dime, jumping over a fence for a free coffee. Oh, it's sad. Look at the world we're living in. And you know the worst part of it? Look at the headline. Defying GOP Obama vetoes Keystone XL pipeline bill by Josh Letterman, Associated Press. Josh, let me ask you something. Aside from the fact that you're a red diaper doper baby raised by anti-American slimeball parents who brainwashed you, and then you went to universities that further destroyed your mind, brainwashed you, what do you mean defying GOP, you moron? The Democrats wanted the pipeline bill. The unions want it. The workers want it, you idiot, you. But you have to make it so that the black man stood up to the man. The real black man stood up to the evil white Republican because he embraces the environment because only minorities can love the earth. The white man hates the earth. Isn't that the narrative? The white man hates the earth. He exploits it. He steps on it with oil. Oily footprints run across America because of the white man. And only the sensitive man of color can save Mother Earth, Gaia, from the evil white man's footprint. So he vetoes the XL pipeline, even though, as I say, there was wide support, unions, workers, both parties. And here's the hypocrisy of this. He's saying he's vetoing it because it may damage the environment. It's such garbage. It makes no sense except to a college graduate to say a thing like that. You need to have gone to either Harvard or Stanford to buy that lie. That by passing the Keystone XL pipeline, you're going to further damage the environment. Only a Harvard graduate can accept that as true. Because the oil from the Alberta tar sands, babies of the Savage Nation, is currently being transported to the refineries here in America via rail line owned by one of Obama's principal supporters and donors, Warren Buffett. Do you think Warren Buffett wants a pipeline to replace his expensive railroad cars? To transfer the oil, the same amount of oil is going to get here. It's just going to be cheaper, you moron, you. Buffett won't take a skim. Instead of giving it to Buffett and the railroad cars, you run it in the pipeline, you bypass the whole train. Well, I guess we got to go back to the 1800s to be really sensitive to the environment. The pipeline would connect Canada's tar sands with refineries on the Texas Gulf Coast that specialize in processing heavy crude oil. It was an $8 billion project that would have created jobs, spur growth, and increased America's independence from the Arabs. You hear this? But Democrat Islamists and the left-wing Nazis have sought to make the pipeline a poster child for the type of dirty energy that they say are exacerbating global warming. This is in the middle of blizzards in the East. Global warming conferences. So this is what you get with a president like this. Now they're going to say he's used the veto less than Bush. He used the veto less than Reagan. He used the veto less than this one. Used the veto less than that one. That's all true because he was a dictator up until now when the Republican Congress came along. He didn't need to veto anything. He got his way. They rubber stamped everything that this maniac wanted. So of course he has fewer vetoes than the others. But now that he has a Congress that represents the American people, now suddenly the maniac's vetoing. And a common sense thing like this? You know, we're living in a crazy world. You're lucky you have me. There's no amount of money on earth worth what I do for you. None.
Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
A foreign government had invaded America and held a legitimately elected government hostage and put their stooges in the place of the president, the vice president, and leadership positions, FCC. And a foreign government wanted no criticism of its actions. What would the foreign government do that Obama and his minions are not doing? Tell me. They're flooding America with non-citizens, telling us they're better than we are, telling us they all come here to work. So they got that under control because the cowards on the Republican side have caved on that. So what's left? Well, you got that nut to crack, which is freedom of speech. That's a bad one for these commies. They hated it. I mean, their Uncle Joe Stalin didn't put up with it. Obama's Uncle Joe Stalin didn't like that freedom of speech stuff. And Obama doesn't like it anymore. He's extremely sensitive to any criticism behind the scenes. Now, how better to stop it than to control the internet? That's the way you control a criticism, is you limit what can be said by whom. So your internet is your last refuge. So who wants to control it? Barry Obama. Why is it that this man has such a vendetta against the American people and against freedom itself? We know he hates the country. We know Giuliani wasn't lying when he said that he doesn't think he loves America. That's a ludicrous statement. Everything Obama has done has been against the interests of the American people, so far as I can tell. I wrote a whole book about it called Stop the Coming Civil War. This man has had a vendetta against America from the day he became president and many days before that. He has a few years left, and he said he's going to squeeze every last bit of change he can out of these 2 years. So what's left that this strange man, this unknown man, this man from a strange background, we still don't know where he was really born. We still don't know what his loyalties are. What does this strange man really want to do before his term is over that he hasn't already achieved? Let's see, he's checked off his obligations to La Raza. After all, this foreign organization that represents interests of foreign countries, La Raza, which means the race, and stands for brown supremacy, so far as I can tell. La Raza is happy. Could check that one off the list. So what's left from the right-wingers? Well, there's that old freedom of speech thing. Then there's the guns. He's got to get the guns before he's gone to satisfy the gun grabbers. Wouldn't that make the witches happy? What's left for them to do? Tell me what they haven't achieved. Can anyone listening to this show tell me what Obama has not yet done that's on the checklist of the radical socialist Islamist left? Tell me what's left to do. It's almost all over. There'll be no controversy left in the country. He will control the messages that come out to you from the government on down. They're going to tell you they're not doing it. They're going to say, oh, no, these right-wingers are nuts. We're not going to do that. No, no. Well, it will allow the FCC to review and punish non-neutral practices that can harm consumers. What does that mean? What do you mean non-neutral practices that may harm consumers? What does that mean? Tell me what that means. Well, it means controlling speech. It's a general conduct rule. It's not just about the broadband. It's not about broadband. It's about the message itself. Remember they said the medium. Remember what Marshall McLuhan wrote? The medium is the message. Listen to what I just said. No one said that yet in this discussion. So let me bring up an old 60s thing. A little 60s thing. Because I remember the most important things to remember. I have a great memory for important things. And a memory that's like a sieve when it comes to unimportant things. Marshall McLuhan, a hero of the left in the 60s, wrote, "The medium is the message." So if you're going to control the medium, which is the broadband, you're going to control the message. And you could take that to the bank. And I'm Michael Savage, and nobody said that yet. Remember what I just said. The medium is the message. And so if the FCC is saying we don't want to control the message, we only want to control the medium, which is broadband, they're lying to you. They're going to control the message because the medium is the message. Would you want to live in a country where the government controls the message? Even if you're a progressive fool, why would you want that? Obama is the most evil president in American history. There's nothing more imaginably evil than what this man is doing. Has he not done enough to satisfy his liberal supporters? Has he not done enough to pay back his boss, George Soros? Does Soros not have enough power that this madman, this maniac, this emigre, this money changer has not enough power and money? He has to now take away the internet from you? This agency, the FCC, is out of control. It's lawless. It should be taken to the cleaners for what they're doing. As Philip Hamburger discusses in his book, Is Administrative Law Unlawful? He points out that one of our founders' objectives was to control, if not eliminate, what in England was known as the dispensing power. What does that mean? It's discussed in English constitutional history. And this dispensing power was a form of exercise of royal prerogative under which the king could excuse himself or his favored subjects from complying with particular laws enacted by Parliament. So in other words, if Nancy Pelosi has some friends and they want to get around it, like Google, after all, she flies on their airplanes. They park them at NASA. How do the Google boys get to park their seven, whatever their jet is, on the NASA grounds? How did they do that? They went around the law. They've been doing it their whole lives. That's how they got to where they are. So the dispensing power was a form of exercise of royal prerogative under which the king could excuse himself or his favored subjects from complying with particular laws enacted by Parliament. And as the author explains, today's administrative agencies, such as the FCC, have resurrected the dispensing power by the way they so often use waivers to grant favored treatment. As the author Hamburger says, after administrators adopt a burdensome rule, they sometimes write letters to favored persons telling them that, notwithstanding the rule, they need not comply. In other words, the return of extra legal legislation has been accompanied by the return of the dispensing power, this time under the rubric of waivers, one of the classic methods of Barack Obama with Obamacare. And then he goes to the heart of the matter, and Mr. Hamburger writes this. Like dispensations, waivers go far beyond the usual administrative usurpation of legislative or judicial power, for they do not involve lawmaking or adjudication, let alone executive force. On the contrary, they are a fourth power, one carefully not recognized by the Constitution. So Obama is now going to grant waivers of FCC rules in order to control not only the internet providers, but the content of the providers. That's what they want. That's why Hillary came back from hiding. That's why she popped out from under the surface all over again. Because she loves the idea of controlling criticism before she runs her campaign for the presidency. And where they got this rodent from, this Democratic FCC commissioner, to go for this net neutrality rule is anyone's guess. Now, I'm broadcasting in a number of stations right now, not all of them, many of them, including San Francisco, KSFO, which is heard in Silicon Valley. How can any member of the Google world, how can any member of this whole new world of the internet, how can any of you be in favor of these progressives who are nothing but Stalinists? Are you not aware of the fact that you've been had, that you are useless idiots? In fact, you're very useful idiots, rather. You're not even useless idiots. You have thought that by being a progressive, you were for freedom. You thought that by being a progressive, you were a liberal. You didn't know that you were not for freedom and you were not for liberalization. You are a stooge of the Frankenstein in the White House who wants to take over the internet, controlling both the providers and the content, under the guise of net neutrality. And remember this, when they came for the conservatives, you didn't raise your voice because you're not a conservative. And when they came for the liberals, there was no one left to speak for you because we'll all be gone from the air. I'll be gone.
I would vote for net neutrality because, as I understand it, it's Title II with a lot of changes within it in order to avoid the worst of the utility regulation. And we also are not operating in a vacuum. We know that other countries are taking their own steps to, you know, monitor the internet, control the internet, which we're not. But what we've got to figure out is how you get the right balance.
How do you feel about Hillary Clinton and the left-wing gangsters not satisfied with all the power they've aggrandized to themselves to date, spying on everyone, That's not enough for them. Now they want to control the internet. How can any progressive not see the truth of what I've been telling you all these years? I warned you for years that when Hitler returned, or Stalin returned, in the case of Hitler, it would not be those individuals speaking German and marching to the Horst Wessel song. In fact, it might be someone waving a different banner entirely. Are you not understanding what you have created? Do you not understand the progressive monsters that you have created? Do you not understand that net neutrality is government control of the media? How in the world can you be in favor of that? Well, you say, well, I don't want you to be heard, Savage. I don't want any of the others in conservative media. It's about time they controlled you. Well, when they came for Michael Savage, you didn't raise your voice in opposition because you didn't agree with Michael Savage politically. And when they came for the next one in the media, you didn't raise your voice to say anything to the government because you didn't like her opinion either. And then when they came for you with your left-wing blog, you said, but wait a minute, I'm one of the good guys. I write progressive blogs. And the government fascist agent who just came from Harvard, the smiling girl, said, well, that's okay. We're still going to control what you say because we have to give you the script. And there'll be no one left to protect you. That's what happened in Germany in the 1930s. Cardinal Niemöller said when they came for the communists, he didn't raise his voice because he was not a communist. When they came for the trade unionists, he didn't raise his voice because he was not a trade unionist. When the Nazis came for the Jews, he didn't raise his voice because he was not a Nazi. Whatever the next one was. And when they came for Cardinal Niemöller to put him in Auschwitz, he said there was no one left to speak out for me. Do you not understand that Obama, Hillary Clinton, and the entire pack of so-called progressives are the neo-fascists of our time? Do they have to wear a swastika for you to be seeing what they are and what they're doing? What has to happen until you wake up, all you brainwashed children of the left? Don't you understand now the chickens are coming home to roost? How could this be happening? This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. That's horrible. You know, I mean, I love the state of California. I hate the administration that runs it. With all in me, I hate them for what they're doing. You can't get a driver's license now. The Department of Mexican Voters, you cannot get in if you're a citizen. Months it takes you to renew your license. Because what they're doing now is they're so evil. They're committing a crime. They're registering Democrat voters in the Motor Vehicle Bureau. We know what it is. They're not happy enough with a one-party system. They want a one-party system for eternity. They're like fluoride. Democrats are like fluoride poisoning people while saying they're preventing tooth decay. They're actually causing depression, weight gain, and fatigue, and aching muscles. Did you read this study about fluoride in drinking water may trigger depression and weight gain, warned scientists? I've known this for years. It's one of the greatest travesties in the history of modern medicine. Fluoride can be causing depression and weight gain, and council should stop adding it to drinking water to prevent tooth decay, English scientists have warned. A study of 98% of GP practices in England found that high rates of underactive thyroid were 30% more likely in areas of the greatest fluoridation. And it says that people are suffering needlessly from thyroid problems, which can cause depression, weight gain, fatigue, and aching muscles. So they recommend that they remove the fluoride from the water to prevent tooth decay. This is one of the greatest scams. It was a chemical company that pushed this on to people. I mean, I drink bottled water largely, but look, you make tea, you make coffee, right? You go to a restaurant, it's all tap water. You're poisoning yourself with fluoride. This is such an old story. It goes back to the 50s. People try to warn America about it, but to no avail. There's no justification for putting fluoride in water. None. But I don't want to go into the health area, and that's going to throw people off. Here's another news story. Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Jeremiah Wright's daughter heading to jail after an alleged theft violates her bail. Well, what is that? That doesn't take away credibility from the president. Jerry L. Wright, the daughter of Prezi Obama's controversial former pastor, controversial, was headed to jail Monday after a judge revoked a deal that allowed her to remain free as she awaits sentencing on a money laundering conviction. U.S. District Judge Sui Myerska ruled that there was probable cause to believe Wright committed a separate theft while on bail. I guess, look, you can't control yourself. It must be OCD or something. Thereby violating terms of her supervised release. Hey, if I were that judge, I wouldn't go jogging around Lake Michigan. That's all I can say. The judge ordered Wright, who appeared in court in Springfield, to be taken into custody by U.S. Marshals. Hey, speaking about Chicago news, Robert, you found some sound of the good Reverend Farrakhan attacking white people again. Let's listen to clip 13 and 14 from the good Reverend Farrakhan.
Giuliani says, Obama does not love America. And instead of apologizing, they say he doubled down, he tripled down. He said, I'm not taking this back. He didn't grow up like we grew up. How did you grow up, Giuliani? A privileged cracker?
Right on.
I should say a privileged devil. You grew up on the sweat and the blood of black men and women who made America before your fathers got here.
You demagogue.
All
son of
you Europeans.
Shut up. You liar, you.
You recent immigrants that have found a home in America. And you are so happy, but you're walking on our blood. Our blood soaks the soil of America.
You hear this hatred? Hitler was not as good as this. You talk about invoking emotion in morons. So now listen to the 15 different lies. Deconstruct the statement of the old preacher Farrakhan. You grew up on the sweat and blood of black men and women who made America before your fathers got here? Are you kidding me? Are you joking? So now the blacks built the railroads in California. It wasn't the Chinese. I mean, the Irish didn't break rocks and they weren't picked on. No. Every race went through prejudice. Every race went through horrors. But this guy makes a living like does Al Sharpton, Barack Obama, and Eric Holder.
Seven. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
You know the old statement that the pen is mightier than the sword? Well, Barry Obama famously said that when it came to doing battle with the Republican Congress, that he has a phone and a pen. And he threatened to veto any legislation or lobby weak members of Congress in order to impose his fascistic views on everyone. And right after the Republicans fairly won the midterms by a landslide, Obama the dictator decided to go nuclear. And after the Republicans, actually the Republican canots, signaled to him their weakness by claiming they would not shut down the government, the dictator enacted an executive order granting illegal alien criminals amnesty, and he dared Republicans to do something about it. They didn't. He neutered the weak Republicans in power, and they rolled over, letting it happen. And now that Obama has immigration out of the way, he's going after you. Just today, an Obama-packed FCC board approved a 322-page net neutrality set of regulations without anybody in the public having read a page of it. That's something that was done in the communist era. This will have a devastating effect on the transmission of news and information to you, the public. Obama used this unelected board under the guise of internet fairness to wrap up his control of not only online content, but eventually television and radio content. That's where this will lead. And on the same day that this maniac president of ours did this, he bypassed Congress again, issuing an executive order banning ammunition that is used in the AR-15 rifle. He knows he can't abolish the Second Amendment anyway, so he's doing everything he can to get around the Second Amendment. And again, not a peep from our so-called representative government. Let's be clear, we have few representatives at this time. They will not use the tools to stop this dictator that they have been provided by the Constitution. Now we go to Hillary Clinton herself, who yesterday endorsed the takeover of the internet by Obama's fascistic regime. On a strictly partisan vote, the communists on the FCC, handpicked by the Obama machine, voted 3-2 to have a takeover of the internet. Now, as I said to you yesterday, something no one has stolen yet, because I think it went over their heads. Back in the 60s, one of the cultural heroes was Marshall McLuhan, a hero of the 60s and a leftist at that. And McLuhan's book was, his message was very important. And McLuhan's message was, the medium is the message. Remember that? All you hippies, raise your hand. I see a woman nodding in the front row on heroin, but no, I mean nodding. Yes, I need you to nod yes. I don't need you to nod out. You're not in Hollywood. Okay, I see a few people remember Marshall McLuhan, who wrote, the medium is the message, right? Now, if you're taking over the internet and you're giving it to a bunch of bumbling, idiotic, fascistic, mean-spirited bureaucrats of the type that are running America today, if they're going to control the medium called broadband, then they're going to control the message. That's exactly what just happened today. So here is the fair-minded Hillary Clinton, who has disappeared during ISIS's rampage, rapes, murder, genocide, suddenly pops up out of the woodwork. You got to listen to her in clips 1 through 3. Here she is, the real one.
I would vote for net neutrality because, as I understand it, it's Title II with a lot of changes within it in order to avoid the worst of the utility regulation. So it's a foot in the door. It's a value statement. I think the president is right to be up front and out front on that. We need to do more about how the spectrum is allocated. We need to do more about how we incentivize more competition in broadband. We need to figure out how to treat, you know, connectivity as a infrastructure development. There's a lot of other aspects, so it's not just net neutrality standing alone, end of debate. And we also are not operating in a vacuum. We know that other countries are taking their own steps to, you know, monitor the internet, control the internet, which we're not. But what we've got to figure out is how you get the right balance.
Monitor or control the internet. Monitor or control the internet. So here is the real face of this woman. Here is her not getting her ego out of the way, but putting her ego directly in the way. Here is a woman who is so caring and cooperative that she quotes foreign powers as examples of internet control. Now, who are the foreigners that she's talking about? China and Russia. UN internet powers. Republicans fear net neutrality plan could lead to UN internet powers. An Obama administration official dismissed any link between the FCC's rules and international authority over the internet, which, you know, whenever they dismiss something, you know it's true because they're all liars. Advocates, including President O, argued that the move is the... Oh, you don't understand. I'm not even going to read this. Forget about it. It's over your head. All of the inchworms out there who listen to me on the other side of the aisle, the Solenterate inchworms, those who laugh at Woody Allen's movies and don't understand how damaging his message is, you have no idea what contempt I have for the Larry Davids and the Woody Allens of the world. You don't know the enmity I have for those people. They've destroyed the world. You know why I say it? Because the devil is funny. The devil is clever. The devil is a very funny man. I received an email from a publisher pushing Hillary, and it says, "A woman in the White House, why it works." I have to read this garbage to you so you can see how twisted the world has become. Dear Michael Savage, Hillary Rodham Clinton has a new approach for her 2016 presidential campaign, it reads. The New York Times reported this week. Well, that's a very reliable source, as you know. Clinton has increasingly embraced the idea that the voter of 2016 will see her gender as an appealing asset and even an advantage that she will have over male candidates, as the Times reports. Now, that unto itself, a child wouldn't write a thing like this. When I was a school teacher, if a child wrote that in the seventh grade, I'd say, go back, start again, because you're getting an F on that line. Why would someone's gender be an appealing asset and an advantage over males? Tell me what. What is it about women that give them an advantage over a male candidate? What, just because they're not a man? So listen to this twisted insanity. Quote, Mrs. Clinton is unlikely to play into Republican caricatures of her as a divisive feminist warrior by highlighting her global advocacy for women and girls. Rather, her advisors say, she can be expected to weave gender into matters of economic fairness and opportunity, close quote. Now, if she's been a warrior for women and girls, how come she hasn't said one word, not one syllable, about the enslavement of women and girls by Muslims? How come she has not talked about genital mutilation by Muslims around the world? How come she hasn't mentioned the kidnapping and the enslavement of Christian girls and women in the Middle East, or Yazidi girls and women in the Middle East? It's a complete lie. But they go on. With Clinton's new emphasis on the positive leadership traits a woman can bring to the presidency, voters may soon realize that female leadership is exactly what has been missing in the United States. I mean, you know, you can laugh at a thing like this, but they live in their own world. Why has female leadership been exactly what's missing in the United States? America's run by a sorority right now. America is run by a female leadership. The sorority around Obama is what has wrecked this country. Now they go on, it even gets worse. They quote some crackpot medical doctor, a so-called leading authority in biological anthropology, and here's what he argues. He says, women possess traits that have long naturally made them better leaders and biologically superior to men, especially since men's physical strength is mattering less and less. Tell that to ISIS. Go ahead, tell that to ISIS, doc. Women make the best leaders, Connor explains, because they're fundamentally pragmatic, as well as caring. Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer are caring and cooperative as well as competitive. Unbelievable. Wait, this gets better. Skilled in getting their own egos out of the way. Who is this crackpot doctor? They're skilled in getting their own egos out of the way? You mean Barbara Boxer? Dianne Feinstein got their egos out of the way? Deft in managing people. Yeah, by shrieking at them and scaring them to death. Without putting them on the defensive. Connor makes a compelling case that the end of male supremacy is where we are headed. And he sheds light on how women's ascent to power will make the world better for women and men both. This is Melvin Connor, M.D. Now, I don't know where this crackpot got his medical degree from, nor what his sexual ambiguity is, but I think Melvin Connor, M.D. needs a good psychiatrist. And then they try to peddle a book to me and get him on the show to talk about how good it is. And it came to me from a publicist from the W.W. Norton Company, and I sent her back a note which said, have you no shame? I doubt very much that she even knows what the word shame means. It's been disenabled from the human condition. Now, we know that the military has been degraded under Obama. We learned yesterday that China has actually passed us in the number of submarines floating beneath the waters. Did you know that? Because Obama has so deballed and decimated the military, and I include the Navy, China has now surpassed us in the number of submarines that they've launched. Does that worry you at all? Do you fear the worst now that the stooges on the FCC have adopted the so-called net neutrality bill? Now, after net neutrality, what is next for this government to try and take over? Speaking of guns, Obama has backdoored gun control on the nation. He targeted the top-selling AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle by banning the manufacture of its bullets. Why? Why do you think that the liberals in government fear the AR-15 with this type of ammunition? There's only one reason. They have 2 billion rounds of hollow point 9mm ammunition given out to their own troops. Which troops? Not our military. No, given out to the domestic military that Obama has been building slowly over the last 6 years. What is it that you think this government fears the most? Do I have to finish that question for you? Now, is it too late to do anything to stop this imperial president? What will it take for the uniformed men and women of America for them to figure out what this administration is doing to them and their families? Here's the last question of the day before I take your calls. It is the Savage Nation. VA secretary apologizes anew for misstating military service. Yeah, that's an AP headline. He didn't misstate his military service. He lied about it, you DB. Listen to this, because he's a Democrat appointed by Obama. Veterans Administration Secretary apologized anew for misstating military service. He didn't misstate it. He claims he was in the Special Forces. He lied about it. If he was a Republican, he'd be in prison right now. Can you imagine what MSNBC would be doing with this one? More study nonsense by chicks? VA Secretary apologizes anew for misstating military service. Another AP moron. Veterans Affairs Secretary Robert A. McDonald. I don't trust men who show their wedding ring prominently when speaking. Anyone who holds up their hand with the wedding ring while speaking, I don't trust them. Veteran Affairs Secretary Robin McDonald said that integrity and character is part of who I am, and then he apologized for erroneously claiming he served in the military special forces. He said he made the misstatement in a conversation with a homeless veteran he was trying to connect with. Now, what VA secretary would want to connect with a homeless veteran in the gutter? Nobody but a liar. He did serve 5 years in the Army's 82nd Airborne Division. He was an Army Ranger. Now, you got to give him credit for that. Those are tough, tough assignments. But he did not serve in a Ranger regiment, and moreover, he was not in the Special Forces. He was never part of it. Why did he have to say he was? Why isn't he fired today? A lie is a lie, said Michael Helm, National Commander of the American Legion, the largest veteran service organization. I can't believe people do this. Why would he say this? The guy leads a department trying to restore trust following Obama's scandal after long wait times at VA health centers. The illegal aliens who are diseased have no wait for medical care while our veterans rot in hospitals. Anyway, what am I going to do about this? Nothing. See, what can I do about it? That's the problem. If we lived in a decent society, he would be thrown out of office immediately, and a decent man would be given his job. But, under Barry Obama, and that never happens. That, especially with a little friends in the media. That's all. You think that's a big deal? Nah, not to the average person. There's no draft, so it doesn't mean anything. Most of you don't know. What do you care about the military? Did you hear some of the news? The police in New York have been instructed to close their eyes and take deep breaths in times of stress when confronting a violent individual. Did you hear this? I swear to God, I'm not making this up. This came from the New York Post. Cops should take a deep breath and close their eyes when dealing with angry people, according to the NYPD's new retraining program under the communist Sandinista-loving lunatic Bill DiBlodio. The potentially dangerous advice is part of a $35 million smart policing primer by Mayor Bill DiBlodio and Police Commissioner Bill Bratwurst. And most cops who have gone through it say it's completely useless. You know, Bill Bratwurst, they'd be better off with Bill Bratwurst as the head of the police commission than Bill Bratton. He doesn't represent the police. A piece of Bratwurst would do a better job. One cop who sat through two full-day programs called them not realistic and pretty silly. At one point during the lectures, the cop said, those in attendance were given breathing exercises to learn how to calm down when confronting a dangerous individual, even when facing someone posing a threat to the cop. The lecturer said that if you find yourself in a situation that's getting heated, just step back, close your eyes, and take a deep breath. I wonder what feminists taught that to the cops. See, I would suggest that they take the trainers and put them on the streets of New York for one day. Take some of these feminist lunatics, some of these diversity gangsters, some of these anti-police vermin, put them on the streets of New York for a day and tell them to breathe deeply when confronting a lunatic with a gun. Another cop called the lecture smoke and mirrors to appease the public. They want you to stop and think about everything before you do anything. But a lot of times cops have to make a split-second decision, and they don't have the luxury of stopping and thinking, the cop said. No kidding. Do you know the first rule of warfare? Don't hesitate. Did you know that? It goes back to the Stone Age. If you read about the Vikings training, when they were training young people how to go into battle, the first rule was never hesitate, because if you do, the other man won't kill you. He'll kill you. Everybody knows that in combat, he who hesitates is not lost, he's dead. It's unbelievable to me what's happened to this country. These lunatics who are running America, and their cousins who are running Hollywood, and their sisters and brothers who are running the media to continue to lead us astray. Maybe the disconnect is finally showing itself after all this time. Maybe the American people are finally getting tired of being lectured to by a bunch of nuts about things they know little to nothing about. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
So here's John Kerry saying, we'll retake Mosul, but I won't say when. Now, this is a shock. Remember last week they published a story with they're making it sound like they didn't say it. A Pentagon spokesmouth 2 weeks ago got up and said, we're going to retake Mosul, and here's the number of units. Here's the exact equipment. We're coming in from the east, the north, the south, with the number of times exactly. We're drawing the, if you want the plans, there's a PDF on the State Department website. Anyone in ISIS who would like to know where we're going to attack, when we're going to attack, how many troops, what weapons we're using, precisely when the guns will go off, exactly when to come out of the souk and put down the coffee cup. Go to our website, the State Department, and you'll see the PDF. It'll show you exactly when we're going to attack. I'm with the State Department. They said it. We have the soundbite. Then all of a sudden, you read over the weekend, they decided not to attack Mosul under the guise that the Iraqi troops weren't ready. Listen to John Kerry. Listen, what a bumbler is this. Listen to 20.
Contrary to what was in the newspaper earlier sometime, I think, in the week, we're not going to advertise when that will happen. It will happen.
Well, you just said it last week.
We're not going to talk about the strategy. We're not going to lay out
the
plans.
You did it last week, Schmendrick.
The Iraqis are working hard to come up to speed. There's a lot of effort being put into this.
You've been waiting about 1,000 years.
We will do it when the moment is right and when we know we can proceed forward with the confidence that we want.
Yeah, when you throw the medal over the wall again, when you throw your Purple Heart over the wall again. Now, the only thing is I could be wrong on this. That Obama and Kerry and Susan Rice and the sorority could be so smart that they did this to trick ISIL into thinking they were going to attack Mosul by telling them when they were going to arrive, how they were going to arrive, with how many troops they were going to arrive, and which equipment they were going to have. Maybe they were just scaring them. So the monsters started to build the defenses. Then they said, we're not attacking Mosul. Instead, we're attacking Tikrit in the Sunni triangle. It's possible they're smarter than I think. I mean, in World War II, remember, D-Day was not seen by Hitler to be coming into Normandy. He thought they were going to invade from another area, I think in Belgium, because the Allies were so smart they built whole armies of rubber tanks and rubber weapons that when seen from the air by reconnaissance planes, it looked like they were massing in a different part of England to invade in a different spot than Normandy. So Hitler, thank God, made the mistake of putting his panzer divisions not over Normandy. God forbid he did. We never would have been able to. The boys couldn't have gotten up those cliffs. They had to run a day and a half away to get down there in time. By that time, the poor guys had already made it to the cliff tops. But the point is, of course, there's all sorts of strategies in warfare. If the sorority girls did this to confuse the psychomaniacs called ISIL, then I take my burqa off to them. I really do. We'll retake Mosul. We're on the way to Mosul. What else? Let's see a clip 21. Is a different one?
There are a number of different options out there, so nobody should count on what they've read or what they've seen. This will happen when we are ready. It will happen on the coalition schedule.
Coalition.
And it will happen when there is confidence that it will be successful.
What a coalition. Coalition. They're bombing Tikrit right now, but not the United States. What a coalition. Two jets from Egypt, 1.5 jets from Jordan, 1/3 of a jet from Spain, and that's a coalition. But the U.S. Air Force isn't involved in bombing Tikrit. What kind of war is this? You ever seen a commander-in-chief like this? They're not going to take Mosul, but they're taking Tikrit. But the U.S. isn't involved. Where are the jets? Were they looking to attack Republicans or a Tea Party group somewhere? Where are the jets? Why are we not using them? What are they for? What do we train these young guys to fly them for? Aren't they supposed to bomb them into the Stone Age for us already in 2 days and get it over with? Well, that's how it was run when Schwarzenegger was in charge of... Do you remember that Iraqi freedom? Remember the first war? Do you remember the preparation for invading Iraq? Do you remember that? The shock and awe campaign from Bush Sr.? Do you remember how wonderful it was to see Baghdad going up in smoke? Those targeted bombings? I mean, we all stood home watching it in amazement. They took out command and control in Iraq, in Baghdad, then another one. The TV station, this station, and shocking. It went on for days. And it was such a beautifully orchestrated plan, and they had all the weapons lined up before they invaded. Then they invaded. With this group, I never saw anything like it. They won't use an airplane. They won't use a tank gun. They won't use an anti-tank gun. They won't use an artillery shell. They won't use this. Every weapon they hold back for when, I don't know. What are they using? If they're prosecuting the war against ISIS, will someone please call this show and tell me what weapons they're using? Because I don't know what they are. Once in a while, they fire a missile over there, like an unmanned drone from Florida. The guy in a bunker somewhere in Tallahassee or in Jacksonville sits there with a mouse and he moves it around. He kills people. And that's the coalition. I don't understand what we built the jets for. What were the F-16s? What are they flying over there now? Are they still flying the 16s or the FA-18s off the aircraft carrier? Probably the 18s. The 16s are so old now, I think they gave them to Portugal at a bargain. Comes with parts for 39 years. So the FA-18s are flying off aircraft carriers. Every 3 weeks they fly a mission and they bomb a pharmaceutical plant or a yogurt shop somewhere in Mosul and they deny ISIS yogurt for a week. I have no idea what they're doing. They're saying they're blowing up. Have you seen them blow up one Abrams tank that was stolen by ISIS? Wouldn't you think that they would show us that? They said they blew up tanks and heavy equipment from ISIS, but all the heavy equipment was stolen from the Iraqi military, which we gave them, the very great Iraqi army. Be a millennia, another millennia till they can fight. But wait a minute, where is he telling us that, I don't know, it's so stupid. The only one who made sense over the weekend was Netanyahu and King Abdullah of Jordan. Clip 18 is so beautiful. You got to listen to this one. Play it.
This has to be unified. I mean, I've said this to leaders both in the Islamic and Arab world and to the world in general. This is a third world war by other means. This brings Muslims, Christians, other religions together in this generational fight that all of us have to be this together.
Would you believe that's King Abdullah with such a fine accent? You expect him to speak with a heavy accent like he's serving you souvlaki from Greece. Or something you're like, but it wasn't. Why? Because he was educated at Oxford. And he's a jet pilot on top of it, or a fighter pilot. So here's a guy who says it's the Third World War, and it brings Muslims, meaning him, he's a Muslim, together with Christians, that's America, and other religions, meaning the Jews, which he can't mention, and I'll even say Jews. And Hindus in this generational fight, that all of us have to be in this together. So everyone's in it except Obama. How does that figure? Jordan's in it. Egypt's in it. Saudi Arabia's in the war. UAE is in the war. Everyone knows except Obama won't say it's a war. He won't say Muslim. He won't say Muslim. Can't say it. Doesn't know how. Never heard of it. Nothing to do with Muslims. And you know the most astonishing thing on this whole issue of why he won't say Muslims and war and atrocities was written a week ago. Which I played on the Savage Nation, a group of feminists. They're Muslim feminists. They call themselves liberal Muslim feminists. And, of course, they're not from America because there are none here. America, we get the other kind. But these liberal Muslim feminists said, what is it going to take the whole world to go up in flames until we realize it's a war being conducted in the name of Islam? And she's a Muslim. And they oppose the psychos who want to drag the world back 1,000 years. Because they're women. They don't want to have their bodies mutilated by these degenerate bums. They don't want their world turned upside down by these psychopaths. And they're Muslims. So she was saying, what is it going to take until Obama recognizes that it is a war being conducted in the name of Islam? She said it. You didn't hear that speech. It didn't make it to CNN? No, I heard it. I was very encouraged by it. Because I've always said it's the women who are going to save the world, and I didn't just mean Muslim women. I felt in America the women are going to have to save us from what these people are doing to us. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened yet, but I'm still waiting. Every once in a while I see a woman, you know, who appears in Congress, but it's like too little, too late. Questions. Do you think Obama's undermining Israel? Do you think he's working for Iran? Who actually killed Putin's opponent? You heard my theory on that? It wasn't really a theory. It was a suggested thought. Because right now, all the wise people in the media are saying, oh, killed by Putin, Putin did it, Putin did it, Putin. This is Anderson Cooper of CNN. Well, Putin killed his worst enemy. Oh, this is Fox News. Look at that, evil Vlad. He killed his enemy. Here's the New York Post. Vladimir's lame blame. Everybody jumped already. Putin did it. They know for sure. How do they know for sure? No one thinks anymore? They want to smear Putin. Why? Because Obama hates him. He's evil, too. He's the worst person on earth. Him and Netanyahu are now one and the same to the idiots in the media. Oh, maybe he did orchestrate it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not privy to this. I'm not invited to secret meetings. There's no secret handshakes. I'm not going to the Congress tomorrow. Boehner didn't invite me. Maybe one of your favorite talk shows will be there hobnobbing with him. Good luck to him. I was there once many years ago. I enjoyed it very much. It's when a guy who was in Congress from California, when they had a Republican from Congress, who skied into a tree. I forget his name. Bono. Sonny Bono. Nice guy. He had me. Then there was another Republican. I was very honored. Immigrant son going to the congressional dining room. The food was from hunger. It was like eating in a country club in Connecticut that wouldn't have you as a member, and everyone just drinks, and the food is horrible. That's what the food was like. But it was thrilling to be there. Everyone was somber and eating, but it was very nice. But I don't think I'll be invited. I'm not invited anywhere. This is what keeps me humble and keeps me hopping. It keeps me nimble and keeps me thinking. So I'm just thinking. That's all out loud on the Savage Nation. Is that still allowed, or is that automatic condemnation? They'll make me what? Luckily, I'm not a reporter. I never posed as a journalist. I'm not Bill O'Reilly. He posed as a journalist when I used to call him an entertainer from the beginning. You don't remember? Oh, he's hated me for years. But the point is, all right, good, live and let live. I don't have to put him down. But right now, you know, what goes around comes around. The point is this. If they took down, you want to talk about O'Reilly for a minute. If they took down Williams for lying about a copter with the thing in the book that shows there, and he wasn't there, and he was this, and he saw bodies in the river, and off the air, boom, fuck, gone. Gone. There went poor Williams, the pancake makeup guy. Now O'Reilly comes up with, I wouldn't say equally absurd statements, but plenty of close. So, and I don't like the people attacking O'Reilly. They're scum of the earth. There's a guy from the Nation magazine, as far as my opinion, if I was in charge of America, I'd fly him over Baghdad and drop him out of a plane in a parachute, let him go join his friends, these communist bums. But nevertheless, okay, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Is that how it goes? I don't know. He's not my enemy. He was never my friend. I don't know him. I know he hates me. He can't stand, but I don't really care. You know, live and let live. It's a big world. He does his TV. He failed in radio and opened up. Fine. But they have a point. If the guy made up stuff the way Williams did, then why shouldn't they throw him off the air? I don't understand it. Isn't it a double standard, or am I wrong? Same. Okay, but Williams said he was not a... Didn't Brian Williams say he was a journalist? Right. Didn't O'Reilly say he's a journalist? Yes. So shouldn't the same rules apply? So do the same rules apply to me? No, because I'm not a journalist. I wouldn't be caught dead in the room with a journalist today. Do you know a journalist you can trust? Why would anyone want to be a journalist? There's not an honest one in the world. They made up stuff from the day the journals were first printed. They would make up stuff to fill a newspaper. So what's any different today? That's why I am not a journalist. I'll be back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. So why is it that Obama feels he can continuously degrade Israel and enable Iran? I wrote a book in 2005 entitled Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. It was written not in jest. There's a high degree of mental illness amongst liberals. You may not know that. But when I wrote Liberalism is a Mental Disorder back in 2005, it wasn't tongue-in-cheek. Not at all. You want to hear some of the jacket copy from 2005? And I'm not going to make any money if you bought a copy somewhere, if you can even find it. On Iraq's future, this I wrote in 2005, Iraq cannot become a melting pot as long as it insists on a national religion, especially when that religion is Islam, which has zero tolerance for those with nonconforming views. On rousing the sleeping giant, well, yeah, that didn't happen. The ACLU, the head of the snake is the American Civil Liberties Union, which fashions itself as the de facto fourth branch of government. Let's see what else Michael Savage said. Well, there was an awful lot in there. How about this? Alien invasion. Do we have an alien invasion in America right now? Do you still hear English being spoken in your neighborhood? No. I wrote fictional characters about aliens in this country. And I talked about illegal aliens who, by definition, have no right to be inside our country. Well, that fell on deaf ears. And then I wrote this, Hands Across America. Take the lower number of 12 million illegals. That was a fake number even then. I said it was more like 35 to 40 million illegals. Right? And then I said I'm the son of an immigrant. So I'm not an immigrant basher. But I said there's a right and a wrong way to go about migration. And I said what's happening to our borders is beyond disgraceful. It's a recipe for national self-destruction. And I said, don't get all weepy with me about how these millions of illegals are just hardworking Mexicans looking to feed and deliver their impoverished families from their grinding privation of their backward homeland. Oh, I'm all for people improving their lot. But consider this. If millions of illegal aliens can cross into our country unmolested every year, is it such a stretch to believe drug traffickers and terrorists could do the same thing? Tragically, slipping across our poorly staffed and often unmonitored borders is a breeze for any narco traffickers or terrorists seeking to avoid detection or recognition at our airports, seaports, and bus and train terminals. Is this paranoia? Are these scare tactics? Hardly. And I gave you the facts on that. And this was in 2005. And so it's gotten worse, not better. And I called it chronic insanity. Because our leaders have known about this for years, and yet they're enabling it. And I wrote about that then in 2005. I wrote about the lack of any compassion for America by liberals. And here we are now. It's gotten much worse than it was then. Driver's licenses, Medicare, Medicaid, free school lunches, college grants, tax rebates of $35,000 per illegal family. It's all part of the No Illegal Alien Left Behind program that has now emerged in America. You know that back in 2005, treating uninsured illegal aliens cost this country $2.2 billion a year? Did you know that? Here's some old figures for you. It cost $2 billion to lock up illegals in prisons. It cost us $2 billion in Medicaid. It cost us $2.2 billion in uninsured medical costs. It cost us $1.4 billion in federal aid to schools. It cost us $1.9 billion in food stamps, WIC, and free school lunches. And that was 10 years ago. How are we going to afford this now? Did you know that Muhammad Atta, one of the 9/11 masterminds, was stopped by a policeman but was not detained because he possessed and displayed a valid driver's license, even though he was essentially an illegal alien with an expired visa? Well, you get the picture.
Savage.
Things happen in radio that are memorable, and what you're about to hear is a memorable radio interview that is unmatched in today's world of talk radio. It's an interview with an American hero before he was assassinated, executed at the shooting range. Back in December of 2011, I had Chris Kyle, author of The American Sniper, on my radio show. I want to thank Joe Seals for having captured this interview. This is an historic tape. This is Michael Savage interviewing the author of The American Sniper back in December of 2011, Fire. Joining us right now in the Savage Nation is Navy SEAL Chris Kyle, author of American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history. Chris Kyle, thank you for your service. You're a true American hero, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's definitely great to talk to you.
What made you decide to write this book?
Actually, I wanted people to understand not only the service members, but the families and all the sacrifices that go in or part of any deployment. You know, when I deployed, my wife was basically a single mother, raising two kids, taking care of all this simple day-to-day life stuff that stresses people out, but now doing it on her own and also having to worry about her husband. And this isn't something unique to me. This is every service member goes through this who is married, or not even married, you know, mother and father. Second reason was Ryan Joe and Mark Lee. They are two true Americans who died for their country, but they didn't get the Medal of Honor. You know, one got a Silver Star, the other one got a Bronze Star. So you don't hear their story. So I want to make sure to get that out. And lastly, I know writing this book is going to give me a voice. I have an agenda. I am an advocate for veterans, and there are different things I want to help these people with. Whether they come home and they're having problems, I want to help them in every facet of their day-to-day life. Or if they don't come home, I want to help take care of the widows.
Would you tell my audience on the Savage Nation some of your best and worst experiences as a combat sniper?
You know, some of the best experiences are just when you see your training takes over and, you know, your guys are just rocking and rolling in the middle of combat and spirits are high and it's getting to be, you know, it's a day-to-day event. You get shot at every day and we're sitting there laughing, making jokes, cracking at each other while you're in the middle of this firefight. That, and then just the strong brotherhood that you have with these guys. You have a new family now, and it basically becomes your number one family because you're away from your other family so much. And then some of the worst experiences are, you know, being up there feeling helpless, not able to protect a Marine or, you know, a soldier that's down on the ground or even one of your own that dies right next to you.
What made you decide to join the Navy SEALs?
I grew up always wanting to be in the military. Honestly, I wanted to be a Marine. That's back when there wasn't a whole lot of hubbub out there about the SEALs, didn't know hardly anything about them. So I went to go join the Marine Corps, and Marine Corps recruiter was out to lunch. So the Army recruiter pulled me over, told me about the SF, and I thought, okay, that's great, but you had to wait to be a E5 before you could go. I left his office, and then the Navy recruiter pulled me in, said, well, if you want to go right now, you can be a SEAL. So he told me about what they were, and I thought, you know, that's awesome. You don't ever hear about these guys. They're out there doing this great job. I want to do that.
Well, I know you can't give us the details, but can you describe what the most dangerous mission you ever were on?
We went to the Army that we were working with, and they were going to be doing a block clearance. They had a city block pre-designated that they were going to go through, clear every house, check for insurgents, for any weapons caches that might be involved. And these guys have been there. They've had our back. They've supported us, getting us in and out in their area that we were working in. So we went to them and said, hey, how about we help you out now? You know, this will free up some of your guys. We'll go in. We'll take a portion of that city block so you're not so stretched in. And, you know, if you do have extra guys, you don't have to take everybody out. So that's what we were doing. The first building we took down, I went up to the top on the roof to take a sniper overwatch position. Ryan Job was standing next to me, covering a different angle. Everything was going flawless. The guys were taking down buildings. I was covering them. When they got to a certain point, took down the next tallest building, they were going to call me down. I was going to go up to the top of their building and just kind of keep leapfrogging there. Before it could get too far, a single shot rang out, and it felt like, you know, debris or something whizzed past my head. We all dove down, which when you dive down, it's a little too late, but natural reaction, jump for cover. As we waited just a few seconds, popped back up, tried to identify the direction and where the shot came from. Maybe we could see someone moving. Ryan was still down. Ryan was a new guy, and he was also my automatic weapons gunner. I hollered at him. I said, hey, quit screwing around. Get up. Let's try to find this guy. Still wouldn't get up. Now I'm thinking, you new guy. Come on. Quit being such a little sissy. Get up. I go to walk over there, and that's when I found out he had been shot in the face. He actually got shot through his rifle because he had it up at the ready. Went through his rifle, came out, hit him in the right eye. It didn't kill him. As I'm trying to apply first aid to him, I call out over the radio, man down, man down. A corpsman comes up there, immediately starts to assess the situation. We decide we got to get him downstairs and extract him. The only problem is the entire stairwell is exposed to the same direction the shot rang out of. As we're getting him ready to move, I throw him up over my shoulder to get him down. Mark Lee stepped up in the exact same spot where Ryan had just been shot and just started mowing down cover fire, trying to protect us as we're taking him down the stairwell. I get halfway down the stairwell, and Ryan starts choking. I set him down. We start to assess the situation again, and then he decides he is not going to allow himself to take anybody else out of the fight. He's going to stand up, and he's going to walk the rest of the way out. And they extracted him. We finished our clearance, went back to our FOB, the forward operating base, and we started assessing the situation as far as what had happened, trying to check out any intel, any chatter that was coming. They came to us and said, look, we've got intel. We know where this guy is, but we need to go in with a clear head. And we all decided, okay, let's do it. We went into this building. It was a two-story house surrounded by other houses. As we went in, immediately we started getting shot at. The house was empty. I'm assuming it was bad intel or a setup. As we're stacking on the stairs to go up and take down the second story, our backs were exposed to a second-story window that the neighboring house, there was an insurgent up there with an AK taking a bead on us. Mark Lee stepped in between us and that guy, raising his rifle to take that guy and also trying to warn us of what the danger was behind us. He never got it out of his mouth. He took a single round and killed him instantly. We continued the clearance of the house. Once it was cleared, we called in the Army. They brought their Bradleys, their tanks, made sure the area was cleared, and extracted us.
Well, what effect did your extremely dangerous job have on your family?
As far as we were told, there's a 95% divorce rate in the teens. And I was not immune to that. My wife and I, several times almost, decided to call it quits. Luckily for me, both of us never gave up on the marriage at the same time. We both, you know, give up at different times, decide this is it. Luckily, and my wife's a super, super strong woman, thank God she decided to stick it out and keep fighting for the marriage. And it was just the constant being gone and, you know, not knowing what was going on. And then all of a sudden finding out, okay, you're here doing this and, you know, scaring the crap out of her. But, you know, luckily we toughed it out. We went through marriage counseling and we had a great counselor. First started going, I was really scared thinking, oh great, it's going to be a woman and she's going to tell me how wrong and how bad I am. Well, the funny thing, we went in and it was a guy, and I was thinking, okay, little nitwit, he's still going to tell me I'm wrong. First thing he did was he started getting on to my wife saying, okay, you need to work on this. I was sitting there thinking, okay, when can we schedule our next visit? But everything worked out, and we're, you know, no longer in marriage counseling. Getting out definitely caused more anxiety with us. You know, I resented the fact she wanted me out, and it was hard enough trying to go from being a SEAL, not only that being my job, but that's who I became. That was my identity, to now all of a sudden I'm going to have to be a civilian the rest of my life, trying to deal with that. And luckily, you know, it all worked out, and I got my mind straight. One of the things that helped out was, you know, I started working out again. You know, and that took away a lot of that depression of, it's a evil little cycle. You look in the mirror at yourself and find out, you know, you look like a big fat has-been of what you used to be. Then all of a sudden you start working out, getting back into shape, looking in the mirror like, okay, I can deal with this now. So you start fixing your mind. And, you know, that's one of the programs we've started now is, there's a company called Fitco here in Plano that we're starting to put gyms into veterans' homes. People who either don't live close enough to a gym, they can't make it there, or guys who don't want to go to a gym and get stared at because maybe they're disfigured or, you know, they're not in the shape they used to be in, and you got these gym rats in there, muscle heads, and you don't want to have to be in there defending yourself with why you're a fat piece of crap now. So, and once you turn guys' lives around by getting their bodies back into shape, it's a lot easier to deal with the stuff going on emotionally.
Where can we read more?
American Sniper. You know, it's, and initially when I was writing the book, I did not want the number in there because I don't want, this book is not to glorify me. This is not about how great I am. This book, when you read it, you should come out of it saying, look at all those tough guys that I was working with. And, you know, it's easy to look like a hero when you're surrounded by them. And there's no way I could ever have done the job I did if those guys weren't standing right there with me. And people like Mark Lee and Ryan Job, willing to sacrifice it all just for the love of the brotherhood.
Chris Kyle, Merry Christmas, and thank you for your service to the nation. And thanks for joining us today on The Savage Nation. Good luck with your book, American Sniper.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, and again, thank you for having me.
Savage.
Every once in a while, history is made in the world of talk radio, and owing to a loyal listener, Joe Seals, who recorded this interview from 12/22/2011, you just heard a piece of radio history. You know, but you listen to this interview and you listen to what this man went through in this one engagement, and all you got to do is ask yourself, how could you ever, ever again trust the American media? How could you ever again trust a fat slob like Michael Moore, who called him a coward? How could you ever again trust the American left, whether they be in the film business or in Hollywood, rather, or in the journalism, who not only denigrate our heroes, but overtly attack them in the comfort of their own bulletproof lives? Just think about it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com. You can't do anything anymore without feeling guilty. A simple thing like picking up seashells on the beach, right? You'd say nothing simpler. I think I'll collect shells. I want to bring them home. Can't. Someone I respect very much and knows more about everything than me said, I learned recently that if you collect seashells, you're denying an animal a home. I said, come on. He says, what are you talking about? They abandon those shells. And he said, no, they don't. He said, they abandon them when they outgrow them. And another creature inhabits the shell that is waiting for them on the beach. So I said, well, what does the animal do that abandon the shell? They go look for a bigger one. So I said, wow, so you mean even on a shell level, even a seashell level, there people are fighting over turf and housing? The whole world hits you in the eye and you realize something. It ties right into the Israel thing. Every aspect of life is a struggle. I don't care if you're running a bagel store in Biloxi. You're competing with a supermarket who's selling bagels, right? Whatever you're doing on earth, you're going to have competition. And the only people who lie to you are the communists who say that we should have no competition. That everyone should make a living, everyone should have a house, everyone should have a Prius, everyone should have a telephone, everyone should have an Obama toupee, everyone should have medical care, false teeth from Obama, crutches from Obama, wheelchairs from Obama, AIDS treatments from Obama, breast implants from Obama. Whatever you need, Obama will provide it because he's a good man. He's a fair man. Of course, that's a lie because it comes from someone else. It comes from the people who pay for it. So even a seashell can teach you reality if your eyes are open. But it's tough to look at things as they are, I admit it. You got to admit it's very tough to look at reality because if you can't even collect a seashell on the beach anymore, what's left? I know what's left. The minute the show is over, I'm opening a bottle of white wine, I'm going on the beach, and I'm going to watch the sunset. And I'm not going to collect a seashell this time. I will not do it. And so you look at the Middle East. What is that about? It's about organisms called Palestinians and organisms called Jews fighting over a seashell called Israel. Is it not? Is it not exactly that? They both want the same seashell. Now, how does that end? I don't know. No one could figure it out. If it could be figured out reasonably, fairly, and decently, it would have been done by now. I don't know if this problem is soluble. I really don't. And I don't know that there's a solution. Doesn't mean there isn't one. Maybe one day the lamb shall lie down with the lion. Maybe one day a great man will come along who can make peace on earth. Maybe one day someone can come along who can unify the madness of mankind. I don't know. But we haven't seen that man arise yet on this planet in our earth. I mean, in our time. See what I'm saying? So until that time comes, and many of you believe it will come when your belief, your Lord comes back and makes peace on earth. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But until that time comes, there's only room, apparently, for one people in a seashell at a time. Because the two can't get along, can they? And that's the story of the world in a seashell.